Lewis Smedes once asked a Christian audience, "Do you want to go to heaven when you die?" And many hands showed. "Given the chance," he said, "would you like to go to heaven tonight?" And a very few hands went up. He then said, "Would you like to see the world with no more disease, no more crime, no cruelty, no war, a world where love and justice prevailed and spiritual knowledge was everywhere?" And immediately all the hands in the room shot up. Whenever I visit countries in Africa and discover that 30,000 people die unnecessarily day by day, I want to see the world changed. When I go to Khayelitsha, a township camp just outside Cape Town, and meet Happiness, a mother of five children, a Christian woman, an innocent victim of HIV/AIDS, given to her by her soldier husband, I want to see that world changed. When I go and visit Albania, meet a family who've lost their daughter, she's been kidnapped. She's one of those many statistics in the human trafficking that takes place around the world today. Fell in love with a man, and he somehow feeds her into that world, which in Europe is greater than drug trafficking. She's somewhere on the streets of Prague. I want to see that world changed. When I discover all over the world there are millions of people who've never heard the name of Jesus Christ, I want to change that world. And those of you sitting here this morning, you're here, called by God, because you believe that he has a part for you to play in the changing of that world. And worship holds the key. Here we have a story of a worshiper called Isaiah, who's deeply concerned about the world in which he lives. The language of our hymns have been, "Here am I, Lord." It didn't begin that way. When he stepped into worship that morning, his prayer was, "Lord, where am I?" Not, "Here am I." Where am I in this world that I do not like and I do not recognize? And the first lesson I believe that we need to learn from this passage is that the vision for a changed world is always humanly beyond us. Chapter 6 opens with those words, "In the year King Uzziah died." And Isaiah's ministry is rooted in a world he knows well. Uzziah had been a remarkable king. He had come to the throne at the age of 16 and had ruled for 52 years. His early years were a glorious success. There had been political stability, peace in the world, and material prosperity for his people. But in the latter years of his reign, everything changed. And if you want a window, a picture window, of what happened to this King Uzziah, go to 2 Chronicles 26. And that summed up the world of Isaiah. Uzziah had become a proud and arrogant king. As the Bible records, strength and success went to his head. Arrogant and proud, he fell. One day, contemptuous of God, he walks into the temple of God as if he owns it. He takes over and burns incense on the altar, and the priest Azariah, backed up by 80 courageous priests, try to prevent him. They confront Isaiah and they say, "You must not, you cannot do this. Only the priests, especially consecrated for the work, are permitted to burn incense. Get out of God's temple. You're unfaithful and a disgrace." But Isaiah, censer in hand, was already in the middle of doing it, and he angrily rebuffed the priests. He lost his temper, angry words were exchanged, and even as he quarreled, a skin disease broke out on his forehead. And as soon as they saw it, the 80 priests got out of the temple as quickly as they could. They hurried out because they knew that God there and then had given him this disease. And Uzziah, the Bible records, had that skin disease for the rest of his life. He lived in quarantine. He was never permitted to set foot in the temple of God again. And it was his son who took over the government of the country. So when it says, "In the year Uzziah died," it was the picture that was burned into the mind of Isaiah. One picture that summed up the nation, which is why in the opening verses of Isaiah, a disease-ridden king, he says the nation is like that. The nation has bruises and sores and raw wounds. They're not bound up or softened with oil. The state of the king was the plight of the nation. So on the eve of going into worship in chapter 5, it says in the words of Isaiah, "Look long and hard at the land, and you'll see nothing but darkness and distress. Every light in the sky blackened out by the clouds." Isaiah knew his world and it depressed him. The world he knew made him question, how can I minister in a world like this? What can I do to change this world? And here you are as Christian leaders, prepared to go out into a world which may be the world of Texas, it may be a world beyond Texas. And I want you to know this. As a Christian pastor of many years standing, it's possible to be a Christian leader and turn your back on the world. It's possible to be a pastor and bury your head in the sand. It's possible to serve God and let the real world go by. You can choose that. Or you can be among those who want to follow Jesus into this strange and difficult world. You can stand and stare at the world you don't like, and you can say, as Isaiah did, "Where am I, Lord?" And in those moments of extreme helplessness, you need worship. As Karl Barth used to say, to clasp the hands in prayer is the beginning of an uprising against the disorder of the world. Do it. And then, of course, it moves on, and we see how a vision that is beyond us suddenly becomes a vision for a changed world. And it's in the transformational power of worship that that vision is born. In the year that Isaiah carried in his mind the terrible picture of a dying king, he was given an awesome picture of a holy king. He saw the living God high and exalted above the chaos and distress. He saw God the king lifted, seated on a throne. And the robe of the king filled the temple, the worship space full of his presence, the choral sound of singing filling the air, so creatively created for us by our worship group. Holy, 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 this is our great and awesome God. The shaking building, full of smoke and incense, was equally a terrifying picture of the seriousness of the situation in the nation, as well as a reminder of God's sovereign power and rule over all this chaos and distress. All Isaiah's senses are roaring with this awesome picture of the holy God. It was a vision of God he would never forget. It would be renewed throughout his ministry. In order to face the world and fulfill his calling, Isaiah needed to know God in this dynamic way. Worship held the key in his life as it does with ours. You and I, friends, need to descend from trivial worship, which is disconnected from the world. I'm delighted. I said to Paul before I came in here, will the doors remain open so the preacher can see the world while he's preaching to his congregation? And they are open. And we need to descend from a trivial worship which is disconnected from that world, a descent from worship which withdraws from the world. We need worship which enables us to see differently. Worship which breeds a discontent. We are dissenters. And we need worship which is subversive and teaches us to behave subversively. Worship which reanimates our social vision. Walter Brueggemann is right when he says, people are not changed by moral exhortation, but by a transformed imagination. You need to sit there this morning and say, Lord, I want to descend from that dominant culture which constructs the world for me each day. So will you purge and refurbish my imagination to see your will differently? It can happen in worship. And the third lesson we learn from Isaiah is that powerful link between personal and social transformation. To know who you are and to know where you're going is the mark of the Christian disciple. And this vision in the temple gave Isaiah a true estimate of himself. He saw God and he said, Lord, I'm ruined. You'll know how the vision focuses on his mouth, which is very appropriate because he's a preacher. He's now saying, I've seen the Holy King, and as a result, I've seen myself in a new light. And my response is, I can't go on speaking for you, Lord. And if you study this familiar passage, you'll see this remarkable link between the speaking preacher and the words of the population amongst whom he lives. I live among a people who speak every day, but they speak with unclean lips. There are lies, there are bribes, There are indifferent words of worship summed up by the careless king. I live in a corrupt world, and you're asking me to be a preacher in this corrupt world where the people are tainted, and I've become tainted in my own speech so that I simply am an echo of their own words. I believe God gave his servant in Isaiah an insight we must grasp. I can only speak for my own country, the United Kingdom, where I think sometimes the church is known for a loveless judgmentalism. And we need to see a rehabilitation of evangelicalism, and Baptists need to share in that. Where the world doesn't only hear loveless judgmentalism, it hears prophetic protest, which is the hallmark of our Baptist tradition. But it also knows something of people who are friends of sinners. Too often, we're like the disciples who invited Jesus to call down fire on the cities of Samaria. Our attitude is so often, Lord, give them what they deserve. Reveal the power of your judgment, Lord. We need to embrace fully in any doctrinal belief the judgment of God. But here, I believe Isaiah saw a glimpse of the mercy of God in his worship. He knew that God was calling him to do something new on behalf of the nation. And this was it. That was to confess before God the sins of the nation. Sins that the nation was ignoring. Those sins that have been denounced. And they've been denounced by Isaiah in chapters 1 to 5. He now confesses before God, Lord, cleanse this nation that I serve. And Lord, heal this nation that I love. In one of the final sermons of Martin Luther King, he included this plea to his country that we could well echo for our nation, your nation, my nation in these days. He said this, America, listen to me, please. You're burdened down by some terrible commitments. And then he went on to list his concerns, ending with these words, America, I would not say these things to you if I did not love you. Following Jesus as a Christian leader will require you sometimes with a righteous anger to overturn the tables of the money changers. And sometimes it will require you to stand with love in your heart and weep over the city. And you must pray as I pray, Lord, give me the wisdom to know the difference between those two. And the fourth thing in the passage about changing the world is that it takes radical obedience to transform the world. God said, I want a messenger. And the man who had stepped into worship saying, where on earth am I? At the end of the worship experience says, here am I. I'll be your mouthpiece. What shall I say? So God gave him the message. He gave him tough words to communicate. Isaiah was warned that people would hear and not understand. You would understand that coming here to Truett, it was important for me to read up again on George Truett. It was said of Truett, and on your website these words appear, whenever he speaks, people do whatever he asks them. Well, I wish I could speak to Pastor Truett and say to him, Brother George, was that true all of the time? When you were money raising and all around us we see the fruits of his labors, but when you were a pastor at First Baptist Church, Dallas, are you really telling us that every time you preached, people heard and understood? I want to be bold enough to say in this place that bears his name, I think he would agree with me, not all the time. Because even Jesus, who echoed these words, as you know, in his own ministry, about people hearing and not understanding, that's the challenge for preachers going out. That's why Jesus taught in parables. Disciples who heard and didn't understand were given parables because parables reveal truth to those who are hungry, and they reveal truth from those who are lazy and prejudiced. C.D. Moul, you can't teach people by spoon-feeding. You must let people puzzle things out for themselves. Radical obedience will mean that you will be given tough words to say, and people will not always understand those words from God. And you're going to be preachers of hope because Isaiah was given hopeful words to share with people. Cities may lie in ruins. Houses may be desolate. and the fields may be ruined, but all trees in the forest, even though they're felled, new life will spring from the stumps. Somewhere in your armory as a preacher, remember that sometimes green trees and great trees have to come down. God cuts the trees down. He prunes it further and further until only a stump is left. But there's new life in the stump. It's called the holy seed. It's the mercy, the other side of judgment. And that has to be in our armory as preachers. And there are comforting words that Isaiah is given. His generation, our generation, every generation needs to know that there is a Messiah who is the wonderful counselor, the mighty God, the everlasting Father, and the Prince of Peace. Say to broken-hearted people, I can lead you by the hand and introduce you to the healing ministry of the suffering servant. Friends, this is a call to serious discipleship. It's that moment in our service when you have to step into the story. You have chat shows here in the United States, which are sometimes broadcast in the UK. And we have chat shows, and one of the famous ones is the Parkinson chat show. And one day Michael Parkinson was interviewing Michael Caine, the great film actor. And Parkinson says to Caine, distinguish for me the difference between a Hollywood star and a great actor. And Michael Caine thinks and then says, well, he said, I think this is the difference. A Hollywood star is handed a script and says, how can this script be changed to suit my personality? And an actor is handed the same script and says, how can I do justice to what the author intended? As Christian disciples, we are the latter. You're not here just to study books and build up knowledge. You're here to step into the story. The whole of the Bible is an invitation to step into the story and play your part, to fulfill your role, and to read the lines and to live out those lines in the way God intended, so that his unfolding plan of salvation, of changing the world, is fulfilled in this generation. Albert Einstein was traveling on a train here in the United States. The ticket collector comes through to collect tickets, comes to Einstein, and Einstein can't find his ticket. The guard says, I recognize you, Mr. Einstein. After all you've done, I don't need to see your ticket. I know who you are. He goes down the train and comes back up the train, and now he finds Einstein on his knees hunting for his ticket. He taps him on the shoulder and said, Dr. Einstein, I've told you, I know who you are. I don't need to see your ticket. To which Einstein replies, young man, I know who I am. But I need to find my ticket because I don't know where I'm going. To know who you are and to know where you're going, if you're going to be a messenger of God's good news, is fundamental for the Christian disciple. So go out in the power of the Spirit, because Christ has died, Christ is risen, Christ will come again. And you, my friends, have been anointed by the Spirit of God to go out in the power of the Spirit and change that world.